Good afternoon, everyone. Sorry for our delay here. I want to be a respecter of everybody's time. We had four of the five of our members of the committee, and they have disappeared, but they are reappearing as we speak, and we're going to move forward. Our fifth member is actually on our way, so we will start into the process here. What I would like to do first is to let everybody that is present know, and then those that will be testifying before this work group, those in the media, and then my colleagues know that that I have given approval that these proceedings will be available on the Senate website, the audio account of these proceedings. So just to let everybody know, watch their P's and Q's, right? Especially the chairman. I want to give a little bit of history about what this work group covered last year when Senator Shields came up with this concept that the Senate would take a day and look through the different areas of state government and this concept of rebooting state government. Our charge is the areas of general government and the Office of Administration. And if within your packets you can look at a little bit of the history of what we worked through last year, there were actually about $700 million to $800 million worth of savings identified through the process. And, of course, not all of that was implemented. And in the area of general government and Office of Administration, our work group had identified approximately $90 to $113 million worth of savings. Now, there were a number of those that were implemented. And you can go through your notes from last time and see, you know, the different things that we were able to accomplish. One of those that probably was the most public was the idea of not publishing the blue books, which was a $1.7 million estimated savings. And again, you can kind of go through the notes and see the different recommendations that were put forth by this committee. I think it's important to realize that what we've been charged with is to look at different parts of state government, and I actually sent around a handout of that the famous you know, the distribution of how we use the people's money, the dollar bill. And if the members can take a look at that, what you'll see is the areas that that this work group are really focusing on are the areas that really show up in that that other agencies line, if you notice. And we're dealing with about 4.35 cents of every dollar. And when you consider that we're dealing with GR dollars, and the areas that we're looking at now, we're going to be, this process is going on across state government. We're only one of several work groups, but we're looking at the Department of Revenue, the Office of Administration, elected officials, the General Assembly, and real estate. So those are the areas that this committee is charged with looking. The emails that have come in from the public will be addressing those areas of the state budget. And an estimated amount of general revenue that we're really dealing with is around $400 million, this committee. So again, I mean, when you take that big number of what is the number that the General Assembly has to work with, the GR money within our $23 billion budget, that GR number, if I'm not mistaken, somebody can correct me from Senate appropriations is going to be around a $7 billion number, maybe a little less than that. Is that correct? Right. So out of that $7 billion, this working group is charged with dealing with around $400 million of that. So when you consider that number and what the group came up with last year of 90 to 113 million, that was probably a little aggressive of a number to think that with what we're really looking at, you know what kind of savings that we can find. I mean, if we were to get to $100 million worth of savings, we'd be talking about cutting 25%, you know, of just this area of government that we're looking at. And this is the inner workings of state government, you know, that we're looking at. Okay? So that's just trying to lay it out a little bit. What we're going to do here with our time today is, first, we have a couple of presentations that aren't very lengthy that are going to put ideas in front of this committee that we may or may not then use as a recommendation, in this process. And we're going to hear from these two presenters, and then we're going to go into the emails and walk through them. I mean, we've got a lot of emails, and there's a lot of duplication. So as we're going through those, any notes that any of the members might have made about these ideas, I'm going to be bringing forth, you know, what I think about, you know, a number of them that I've highlighted. So, we can go through the process, and then once we work through that, then we've got to make, and I will take from the members, recommendations that we want to put forth to the full body, which will happen at a later time, I guess, this week or next. And that's the way we're going to go. So right now I would ask for the presentation by Johnson Controls, whoever is here, to share with the committee. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Introduce yourself and who you represent.
Senator Lemke, members of the committee, I'm Dave Mosby. I'm a National Solutions Business Development Director for State Governments for Johnson Controls. It's my responsibility to develop solutions to problems that face government, and each of you should have a presentation with the big green orb there. What I'm going to talk to you today about real quickly is an alternative financing and a procurement method to work with existing buildings. And the second page then talks to the agenda. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Johnson Controls, why we believe in this, the challenges of operating government-owned facilities, because a consortium approach to design, refresh, finance, and maintaining facilities. And then if there's any questions and answers. The third slide is Johnson Controls is a worldwide company. We had revenues of $33 billion last year. We're number 58 on the Fortune 500. We have 130,000 employees in 150 countries and 500 sales and direct offices, one in Kansas City and one in St. Louis. Our core business is building efficiency, and we do that through four different sub-functions. One is systems, evaluation of new technologies, services, servicing those things which we put in, global workplace solutions. We manage some of the largest portfolios of buildings in the world. We have 1.8 billion square feet under contract with companies like IBM, British Petroleum, Armstrong, etc. And then also we do performance contracting, which is retrofitting existing buildings to get energy savings and operating savings out of them. What I'm going to talk to you today is the combination of GWS, performance contracting, then working with a consortium of equity partners that would bring to bear financing. The challenges of running government isn't foreign to any of you, and basically what's happening now, the deferred maintenance backlog of the state's portfolio is growing rapidly. It's approaching $1 billion. When I was here 5 years ago, it was about $450 million. And what we offer then is the ability to look at that, infuse some capital cash into these facilities, but improve their operating costs. through energy efficiency and operating savings, and then guarantee you a fixed occupancy cost over a period of time. That's the heart of it. What we are not talking about on the next page is a sale leaseback. This is not selling your assets, which I would never, ever recommend that you do. It is an operating license with a service payment and a hand back after a period of time, and depending on how the financials work out, it's all math, it'd be a 15 to 30 year service availability contract. How do we do it? Well, today your budget involves what's in House Bill 5, FMRF money, if there's any left, capital expenditures, all those things. But you have to arrive at what we call the TCO, the total cost of occupancy. That is the amount of money that you have and operate these facilities with. It includes your manpower and everything. And then you would structure the contract such that all of that, a portion of that, this is very flexible and scalable, would be transferred to a consortium. They reduce the operating cost of these facilities through efficiencies. There's a portion then of debt service, which allow an infusion of cash both into the facilities and if you wanted cash to spend on something else, and then leaving you a margin from what you currently your current TCO is. And then after the debt's paid for in the contract, then your savings are just magnified. How do we do this? What fuels the cash flow? Savings associated with energy reduction projects, equipment changes that reduce repair cost, equipment changes that reduce maintenance cost, equipment changes that reduce manpower cost, improvements in operational processes, savings created by improved procurement, and savings driven from improved energy management. Let's see. The next one is the design, refresh, finance, maintain benefits. Provides a true value for money. It captures the total cost of occupancy, drastically reduces residual value of building stock, or drastically improves. So at the end of the term, the buildings would be in better condition than they are today. Facilitates risk, but transfer to the private sector. So if a chiller breaks, we're responsible for it. We would fix it. Why can we fix it cheaper than you? We make chillers. We can put them in from anywhere from two-thirds to half the cost. But we still use the normal contracting processes. It doesn't affect the contracting world in the state of Missouri. In fact, it will improve it because there will be more work going on. It improves building efficiency, performance, and benefits the occupants because they have a better working environment. Enhances environmental goals. It can reduce the FTE on the state payroll and provides an opportunity for cash infusion. Now, we are willing, depending on how the math would work out, we could infuse up to $500 million. And finally, steps to implementing the DFRM. This is a very complicated process. We would recommend that you select a professional consultant as potentially Ernst & Young. Deloitte is probably the leading consultant in this area in the United States. And Partners PC is a group that the state of California just recently used to look at this. Select or create a finance procurement entity. It is beyond the ability of, in my opinion, and our company's opinion, that the existing procurement processes and situation would be better served if it was a quasi-state entity that did those selections, like the Missouri Development Finance Board. You can issue the bonding yourself through the Missouri Development Finance Board or something like that, or have the entity itself arrange the financing. Determine the scope, what services to be transferred, identify your TCO, how much cash infusion you want, and how much capital investment, and then go to the procurement stages, and normally it's in three steps. Request for information from the market, an RFQ to pre-qualify usually three firms or three consortiums to bid on this, and then final the RFP, and then going to contract. That whole process could take place in 12 to 18 months. That completes my presentation.
Okay, I'm going to open it up for questions, and any of the senators that are not on this working group, if they do have questions for Mr. Mosby, I welcome those. Senator Green.
Has Johnson Controls have contracts with any other states in this area?
We have portions of this. The state of California is one that just recently signed a contract at the end of December. It's not for their whole state maintenance, but it's for part of their court's process, the court houses.
You done them for any cities or counties? Or
we've done them in, this is actually coming out of Canada. Our office in Quebec has done 12 of them in the past 5 years.
When you establish the equipment that you put in buildings, do you have a main center that you control? Let's use as examples the temperatures and specific buildings at specific times that you coordinate them all at a home base when you install these equipments?
Yes, we can do that. We have a regional.
Do you plan to do things like that?
Well, we could. It would depend on the specifications for that. Different types of buildings respond well to that, and some others don't. But for instance, office buildings as compared to prisons. Prisons 24/7 operation. It's a little bit different, but you can get the benefit out of office buildings.
And I don't want to bog you down with too much information, but the one you're saying about California, if you could provide information of the basic.
I have. Angie has the printout. I just didn't make copies for her.
Okay.
And I'm going to be providing her some of the additional information on the other.
It's kind of like Radar O'Reilly with McLean Stevenson. You already knew what I was going to ask.
Well, we've been here before.
Thank you.
Dave, I think also, if this is something that that Johnson Controls is doing in Canada in their different provinces with their governments. I mean, you would think that it would certainly provide us with at least, some other examples of where this is being employed. What kind of time frame? With California, it sounds like it's something that's pretty recent. So you're doing in Canada, how long has that been going on?
Well, there's some contracts. We've just gone to contract, but there's other ones that have been in place now for 5 years.
5 years? Okay, so we can somewhat of a track record.
That type of information. And I'll get it to Angie as soon as I get it on my computer.
Okay. Senator Cross? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the opportunity to sit in and hear this. I had heard some discussions around the Capitol about this, and appreciate your presentation that's here. I want to preface what I say, but I think all our alternatives of where we are and what we do to craft a budget need to be on the table. But this, I don't get. And I want to know how much money you make. I want to know how you make your money, because if all we're really talking about is issuing bonds and continuing to use this as a new form of federal government bailout, I'm not interested in doing that at all. So when you say Missouri Development Finance Board can issue the bonds, hell, I don't want them doing anything. We can't afford a barn, and Missouri Development Finance goes out and issues tax credits to fund that barn. They don't have a clue of what's going on in the real world and what we're dealing with here in Jeff City. So, I understand your theory. I love PowerPoints, too. But I agree with you that this is a numbers deal that I've at least, as one, have got to see the numbers in what you're talking about. Because you sound like we sign a long-term contract with you. You give us money up front. How much are you going to make over the term of that contract?
Absolutely.
And how much control do we have to give over to you? I've got an issue going on right now that I can't get up to the top of the Capitol Dome. Are you going to shut these places down at 5 p.m. because you don't want cold air rushing through the front door? I mean, that's kind of what I want to know.
We put the idea on the table. That's why this is complicated, and it requires a lot of analysis of the cash flow. And bonding with MDFB is just an option. Taking a cash infusion is just an option. Quite honestly, personal opinion is I wouldn't do that. I would, if I wanted to take any extra money, I'd put it in capital and improve the condition of the buildings. But that's as a career facilities guy. So, hire if you want to know more. I mean, we want to compete. If you decide to do it, if not, that's fine. But I would get a consultant who understands the ins and outs of this, and you can actually grill him and have them develop.
Well, that takes money.
Maybe not. Maybe it doesn't.
Well, I think, what's not going to happen is just we pass a statute and blindly authorize whoever else to go do this without the legislature actually seeing more information and in how you make your money. I mean, are you a publicly traded company or are you a private?
Yes, we're private, or okay. publicly traded company.
So with your finances, I mean, what are your you know, cash to value ratios? I mean, what are your forecastings, and what is of public interest and what is not public interest? Who owns you, and everything else like right. that? I mean, because you're a Canadian-based company?
Oh, no. We're headquartered in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay. You're headquartered, but you only have contracts in Canada.
No, just we have, again, we're a Fortune, we're 58th on the Fortune 500 list of businesses. We did $33 billion worth of business last year. And we have offices in 150 countries.
Okay. Well, I misunderstood. You said that you had deals like this in Canada.
We do. Okay. Those deals that we've done are in Canada.
Okay. Not in the United States. No.
And then we do a lot of facilities management in Europe and in the United States for very large companies.
Okay, so you do more than just facilities management.
Absolutely.
You're a conglomerate.
We're a conglomerate.
And this is one subsidiary is facilities management.
Right.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator Krause. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in California and how they're utilizing your company and maybe how you're saving them money short-term and long-term?
The concept that we're using in California is, and it can be used for retrofitting buildings or building new buildings. So we are building them a new courthouse complex in Long Beach, California. Through this process where we will design it, we will build it, we will finance it, we will maintain it for a long-term contract. And so, you know, the typical savings can be some 15% to 30% on the TCO.
Are they going to replace a current existing building?
Yes,
with
they
this
are, because it wasn't worth fixing. And I did talk to the Senate Appropriate staff about there's a couple buildings in Missouri. I mean, you could scale it down to something like that to try it out, like the forensic facility at Biggs in Fulton, the building that you desperately need a new one. School for the Blind in St. Louis is probably the worst condition of any building that you have. And things like that, they're opportunities.
Can we get the terms of the contract, basically, that you're having with California so we can kind of see the numbers with what replacing a building is going to cost the state short-term and long-term and what that contract entails?
One more question before you go, if there's nobody else that has a question. Since we don't have a lot of history as far as doing these type of things with other states, I think that what on the surface made this attractive was this concept of a cash infusion in troubled budget times, you know. I'd be real concerned about this idea. It's just like any other one-time money,
right?
So, but I am interested in the idea that we do have all this deferred maintenance on our buildings that we just keep putting off, and so it's somebody else's problem in the future. I guess what I would be interested in is learning more about how you dedicate, you know, that sum of money to the investment into infrastructure and the buildings, you know, and that type of thing, not where you're using it to fill ongoing expenses, you know, with one-time money.
I believe, from what I know about the facilities and the backlog, that it would take between $100 and $150 million of capital improvement to bring the buildings up to some semblance of where you could start operating them more efficiently. I share your
concerns. I thought the number would be larger than that.
It might be, but my numbers and information is somewhat dated.
Dated, yeah. Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to move on then to a presentation by Waste Remedies. I don't think so, Senator. Introduce yourself, and if you do testify, we need to fill out a witness form if you haven't done so. Okay, good. Good. Good afternoon. Tim, is your microphone on? little closer. A little closer. Speak up a little bit. Okay, I just want these guys to be able to hear you. Okay, good.
Trash program. There we go. Reduce the cost of trash. Since last May, through the initiative of the Governor's Office and the Office of Administration, we've started to help the state do the same thing. We still don't know how much the state of Missouri spends on trash. We know it's at least $4 million a year. And our goal is to knock at least $1 million, so to meet or beat your 25% target on that. We're not there yet. We're a little under 10% of the way through the state's real estate portfolio. So what we do is we look at, can we buy trash services for the state at a lower price than the state was buying them beforehand? We look at, can we either divert more material to recycling programs and avoid the cost of throwing it in a landfill, or can we sell the state's recycling for more money than the state was selling it before? And then we look for logistical efficiencies. So we kind of look and see if the dumpster is full, basically. And if the dumpster is only half full, we say it should be collected half as often. So it's a... It's going through a lot of dumpsters and a lot of trash invoices and a lot of contracts. That's our business. So in terms of reaching our $1 million-plus savings for the state, as I say, we've worked through a little under 10% of the portfolio. We've had great results here in Jefferson City particularly. Trash in Jefferson City is collected by a waste hauler, Allied Waste. They have collected the state building's trash for more than a decade, and we were able to reverse the double-digit price increases that the state was getting, and in fact get the exact same trash service for the state at 27% below last year's costs. So that was one example of an early success we've had. Working with particularly Office of Administration and Mental Health, they've been enthusiastic adopters of our program and participants in it. The way our contract works is a department has to choose to work with us, so they have to sort of opt into the program, and then they get to veto our recommendations if they choose. So just because we say this dumpster should be collected half often doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen. They have to choose to participate, and that's why we're at less than 10% of our way through the state's portfolio so far. But on the buildings we have had the opportunity to work on, we're beating your 25% target, and we hope to get to your $1 million.
So this concept that the department has veto power, I mean, have you made the attempts then to broaden, you know, getting through our portfolio? I mean, how often are you turned down?
A little over 50% of what we've proposed to date has been adopted. Office of Administration and Mental Health have been really excited about the project, and they've been working really closely with us. As an example, I said we try and cut the cost of an existing service, but we also try and find logistical efficiencies. So at a lot of the prisons, their trash is being collected more frequently than is absolutely necessary, in our opinion. So if you've got a dumpster which takes 90 cubic yards, 10 tons of trash, and it's being pulled out when it's only got 3 tons in it, we're saying you don't need to have it collected quite so often. And some of those recommendations are not being adopted to date.
Questions?
Are they giving you feedback on why they're not adopting these?
Sure. I mean, specifically with corrections and why they want their compactors collected frequently, they're concerned about odor issues. So they're concerned that it smells too much. Now, we've been doing this for more than a decade, and we've got clients like Hilton Hotels, and we're recommending the same thing for prisons as we do there. So we're pretty confident that if they gave them a try, it would work.
Size dumpsters?
Yeah. Yeah, prisons produce a lot of trash, as you can imagine. But yeah, we can Hilton's do too. You know, the worst case scenario is we just get it picked up, right? So if we say you used to have it collected every day, it only needs to go twice a week. If it's full, they just call us and we'll get it collected. So it's a relatively low-risk proposition. And I would say in general, what we're doing isn't talking about expenditure for the state. We're specifically saying, here's how you save money. And I know we're only aiming to save you $1 million, and you've got a much larger goal than that. But it's really free money or fund money for the state.
So the $4 million doesn't represent the 10% of the portfolio. You're estimating that we spend $4 million a year across state government for trash disposal?
I think you probably spend twice as much as that, but to date I've only been able to identify about $4 million. A lot of it's bought as needed or through purchasing cards, or it's not necessarily all bought centrally. So somebody who's running a mental health hospital, for example, might be contracting directly with a waste hauler rather than working with purchasing. So it's hard to get a handle on it. You spend at least $4 million a year, and our aim is to save you at least $1 million on that. It might be twice as much.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right, now we're going to start to make our way through the emails. Now, I don't know how much time the members have been able to spend with the emails that have been provided to our committee, but if you go to the table of contents, you see the general topics that we will be dealing with. And, you know, we've got, I don't know how the other committees stack up, you know, to what we have for our committee, but we've got a lot of emails to go through here. And our goal, I guess, is to be out of here by 3:30. So I'm just going to start through the process, and the pages are numbered. And I've highlighted you know, some different things, so I'm just going to go page by page, and unless I've got something highlighted, I'm going to keep moving. All right, and if any member, you know, wants to talk about one of the suggestions, you know, on any of the pages that we have to deal with, that's what I welcome. You know, I think that it'd be very good for us to have some discussion, you know, about these different things, because ultimately that's what's going to dictate what our recommendations, you know, are to the full Senate. All right, so let's just start on page one. I've got, you know, and some of these things are pretty general, but I like what they say, so I think it's something for us to consider. I have a gentleman that is from Cape Girardeau who says that we need to run the state the way we would run a business, and he goes on from there and thinks we need to close down and sell state buildings, and we need to terminate leases. I think those are interesting comments, and that is something that committees that I've served on in appropriations over the years have taken a serious look at. I actually did a lot of work with Mr. Mosby when he was still with the state, looking at our leases across the state. I would encourage any member of this committee, any member of the Senate that know of state buildings in their district, I would encourage you to tour them all. Make sure that every square foot is being utilized efficiently. Because I can remember when we started this process a number of years ago, we went into a lot of state buildings and leased buildings where there was lots of empty space, and the space was not being utilized. And because of that work, we were able to consolidate, you know, a lot of leases and actually go through the process. So I think that is a good comment, and I think it's something that we should work on. Yes, Senator Krause.
One of the things that sticks out to me is this out-of-state buildings. My question, I guess, maybe we need to get into it a little bit more. Do we have very many out-of-state buildings that have leases And I know back a few years ago there was some stuff in Washington, D.C. where we were contracting out. Has that been taken care of? Do we know? And, I mean, is this not the time to talk about it?
No, I mean, I think that's a good question. I think that the way I read this is he's talking about out-state buildings. So, I mean, I kind of took that as states, buildings that are...
Outside of Jefferson City.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I'm expanding upon what he's
I don't think
about.
We own any real estate outside of the state of Missouri. Is that correct? Now, we have some leases... Rick, Commissioner, a couple of right. We still have a couple offices in the Department of Revenue has to collect taxes that are due to Missouri, and it's more efficient for us to have office in. And where are those? We have one in New York City yet? Atlanta. Yes. No. Dallas, Chicago, and New York. Thank you very much. All right. Good question, Senator. All right. I guess we ought to keep moving. That's number one. All right. I am going to keep paging until I have... I'm on page five.
I got one on page four.
All right. Go ahead, Senator.
Eliminate the front license plate. I don't know if that saved the state any money, but I know that's been discussed. A lot of people in my district and other areas have said, why do we have a front license plate? I wonder if there's some cost savings there to the state.
Did we pass that bill last year?
Still required to have a front license plate.
We are. Okay. Is there anybody out there that can shed a little light for the committee? I think it's about $1 million savings, $1.5 million. Anybody have that information? If we just do one plate? It was in the transportation recommendations? Okay. All right. We'll come back to that. I don't know if it's... I mean, we can put it on our recommendations, even though, I mean, it came to us...
$1 million, right. I think that it's worth discussion, and if they got it in transportation, I'm fine, as long as we're going to be potentially discussing that as a body.
It did not make their final recommendations, so... I would support, Senator, that going on our...
One, two.
What I thought.
Say that again, 1.1.
Angie, is anybody taking notes as far as what you are? I knew that. I was just...
Page four, eliminating the front license plates for automobiles. Possible savings of 1.5 here.
Good. Thank you, Senator. All right. On page five, we have a recommendation from a gentleman in Poplar Bluff that says he estimates that it would save the state $5.6 million with coordination of state government educational health services traveling in to distant meetings. I think that we've had a number of different emails that have addressed travel, and especially for training. And I think that it would be important for this committee to consider the opportunities and avenues that the state has made investment in. As far as being able to do teleconferencing whenever we can. I mean, there's so many different expenses that are associated with going to these training meetings other than, the reimbursement, for gas, food, hotels, and, just the loss of productivity. It's not going to be able to fix all of our state travel, but I think state travel in a time when we've got the shortfalls that we're looking at should be something that we really consider at least a moratorium on. So anyway, I'm going to look further into this. This gentleman says that he has a white paper actually upon request. So we'll take a look at that. Page five. Senator Green, we're we're just going through page by page, and if I don't have anything highlighted, I'm not stopping. All right. So if anybody else has something highlighted, all right, good. All right. Page 7.
Skip it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Look at it. It talks about the ceremonies. I'm guessing he's talking about ribbon cutting type things. Probably all been to these a million times, and they're probably advantageous, but and have a little party every time a new road opens.
I'm glad you caught that one, Senator. That's a good point. I know for those when they're in our district, I mean, it's certainly something that we want to participate in. But we're there. The different people from the different departments that may show up, you know, they've traveled to get there.
Or right? The commissioners that are traveling in, I bet their mileage is expensed.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's a good catch. All right. I thought this was interesting. On page 13, there's a number of different things covered here, and some of them we've already talked about. But I do like the idea where this individual encourages the legislature to get out in the field, visit state offices, ask tough questions of local managers with assurances of anonymity, and be ready to listen to what they're saying. And really, if you took the time to go through some of these emails, it's very apparent that they came from many of them came from state employees that knew that they could share with this committee, this work group, information that may be valuable in the job that we're trying to do here. And again, I'm not looking for a way for us to rack up miles, but I think that as we go through this process, we're going to have to talk to people that are out there in the field. Quite frankly, being involved in the appropriations process over the years, the department heads come to the appropriations committees, and they tell us, quite frankly, what they want us to hear. And I think it's going to take some investment of time and energy for members of at least the Government Accountability Committee that the pro tem is forming to get out there in the field and find out where we can get some good information from our current state employees that want us to be efficient. So,
Senator, I don't know what page you're on, but on page 31, I don't know what I skipped there, but going on that idea, maybe doing something where you give incentives to state employees that find cost savings. And I don't know what that would look like, but, that has currently been done.
It is. Good. Well, good.
Good. Well, maybe we need to promote it a little bit more and highlight the incentive to save money to the state.
Good.
One page back, you were on 13, and one page before that talked about the AG's Spanish website. Does that really happen?
I saw that. I didn't... I mean, maybe it does, Senator, but I don't know. Does anybody know if there's any added cost incurred if he's already got a website up and then I guess you can access a Spanish website at the same time? Anybody know? Might something we look into? I probably isn't anybody here from the AG's office. I wouldn't think so.
Well, this would almost imply that there's a standalone Spanish website.
All right.
Would you? There is a standalone Spanish website on the AG's.
Why don't we inquire about the idea that by maintaining that and having it up, is there added cost?
And I would even wonder if that might possibly violate our state constitution that says all official proceedings of this state will be done in English. That does not exist for free. Nothing is free.
I mean, there certainly would have to have somebody that would maintain it and keep it up.
It's not free.
Right.
There's nothing in the world that's free, and that is not free.
and that may possibly violate our Constitution anyway. So,
all right, so we'll look into that. Thank you, Senator.
Maybe I have to type it in Spanish. Did you type that in Spanish?
All right, page 14. Reconsider the fine collection center. Can anybody explain to me what the fine collection center does? Okay. It's in a different. Okay. All right. That's under somebody else's purview. Make a note of that for me, anyway, will you? Okay. Good.
Senator.
Yes, Senator.
Why would that be under a different purview?
I think it is OSCA, which is under the whoever is looking at the judiciary. We'll pass that on to Senator Goodman. Go ahead, Senator.
Two things. We have, 114 counties? All these counties have prosecuting attorneys. Even though they divide them in circuit judicials that encompass at times 3 to 5 to 7 counties, why not have a district prosecutor system as opposed to a county prosecutor to correlate with how we have district courts throughout the state? The other thing, if the senator can indulge, we have over 500 school districts throughout the state, consolidating school districts. Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Senator. I just want to touch, make a point on an email that was sent in on page 16. It said, you're cutting jobs, yet you put $8 million into advertising the lottery. First of all, this senator fought that tooth and nail as far as giving lottery more advertising money. But I just wanted to make the point publicly that these monies cannot be used to save jobs elsewhere. I mean, lottery money is dedicated, to the school fund, and lottery was able to convince enough of my colleagues that by spending more money on advertising that we would reap more benefits for our schools. So, and we'll see how that goes when we get to appropriations. But anyway, I just want people to know by putting money into advertising for lottery didn't cost anybody anywhere else in state government their state job. Let's see. Interesting, on page 17, although this wouldn't be in our area, but we have somebody that wants to get rid of Parents as Teachers program completely. Yeah, right. On page 18, and I'd like for us to, maybe look at the growth of at least this area of state government. We need to look back over the last 10 years and see how the different divisions have grown. Take professional registration, for instance. So I think that would be incumbent upon us to look at the different divisions and maybe track those over the last 5 to 10 years and see what kind of either growth or maybe they haven't grown. Maybe we've reduced FTE in a lot of these different areas. Senator Green.
With professional registration in the state statute, over many, many years, you have created all these boards and commissions to oversee. I always use my wife as an example because she is a nurse, the State Board of Nursing. They have in statutes their set funding mechanism in the set way they go about running. A lot of them have resources they don't spend because they are funded outside of GR. they are on a fee-based budget. So trying to rein in or change them, you might have to look into changing statutes to how boards operate, and every specific board will come out of the woodwork saying, don't leave us alone, let us operate. How yeah. Just friendly advice.
No, I think that is good advice. I know that the governor is interested in maybe putting forth a piece of legislation that would address either elimination or consolidation of some boards and commissions. And actually, I believe that if we get through our work here before in a timely manner, there might be somebody who wanted to share a little bit with the committee on that. So let's keep moving. Page 24. I thought this was interesting about looking at, you know, again, the different structure. By the way, I failed to mention this in my opening remarks. You know, this concept of rebooting state government, my understanding is that structurally the last time that the state government was restructured in Missouri was in a process that started in the late 60s and actually finished under the Bond administration in about 1973. So, you know, this is something that, you know, is probably an exercise that, you know, all governments could benefit from, you know, with new technologies and all the changes. But this is something that has been done before and maybe very timely, you know, in this time where, you know, we've got a, you know, budget crunch. But it talks about this idea of and I hope I don't ox or gore anybody's ox out there, but, you know, looking at these different, if you're going to trim jobs, maybe we should be looking at deputy directors, assistant deputy directors, assistant directors, all the different, you know, levels, you know, of, I guess, upper management, you know, in these different agencies. So, I mean, as we do our work, I mean, I think it's important for us to look, you know, and I think that we'd all agree we don't want to necessarily go to the front lines where the services are getting to our constituents, you know, whether it's here in Jefferson City or back in our districts. Okay, I'm still under Tab 1, I'm on page 34, gentleman from Kansas City, Missouri, thinks that we should privatize as much as possible, thinks we ought to go to the fair or the flat tax, thinks we should privatize schools, which is interesting, conduct a comprehensive study on pensions and salaries. Well, that's something that certainly Senator Kral is working on, and I believe will continue to work on. Says that the state spends roughly $8 million a year on Cisco hardware and maintenance. He says, my guess is that at least $2 million could be reduced from this budget with competition introduced in the marketplace. So that's interesting. I mean, I think that the idea there is, and it comes up in a number of different emails in different sections, is the idea is we have a process of bidding. In the RFP process, are all the departments using it? And I'm not saying that they're not. I'm just saying that from what I hear and some of this correspondence that we're getting from what I would believe be state employees, that you know, hopefully we're following our own rules and the laws, you know, that are put in place as far as the bidding process. And I think, again, with the the work of these committees, the rebooting committees, and then the work, the ongoing work that will be going on both in the House and the Senate, in the Senate through the new committee that the pro tem has created, government accountability. These are the type of things that we're going to be looking in great depth, not in an hour and a half, you know, with this work group, but on an ongoing basis. Yes, Senator Green.
If I can have staff in to look into something throughout the year, I would like to know what could be saved time with department bureaucrats if we went on a biannual budget instead of an annual budget, and possibly drafting the legislation with Senate research to do a biannual budget. Because currently right now, I told Mr. Chairman this, we do an annual budget and then a supplemental budget. Why not just do a biannual budget and then the following year do a supplemental budget? Because there's a lot of bureaucrats that spend a lot of time in these buildings when they could be doing other work. So I would like that looked into. How do I go about asking? I just ask you, right? And
right.
It gets done.
And it gets done?
Yeah.
That hasn't been the track record.
I have faith in you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Cross.
Go along that theme. We could eliminate most of the second session, where we'd have a situation where we'd do a full session 1 year and come in and just do the supplemental budget or a limited scope during the second year, so we're not here as much. I think there'd be some cost savings there, along with this gentleman from Green.
So there are no gentlemen in the Senate, Senator.
Amen.
It's a freshman mistake. Excuse me.
I don't have my gavel here, but no, that's great. I think that's good. I'd also like to know if it's available when we provide that information to the committee, the history, because I believe at a time that we did have a biennial, in the 70s we changed that. Anybody with any institutional knowledge out there? Governor Hearns?
Governor. Final budget.
Okay. Okay. So, what were some of the reasons given to change to a annual budget? Any? You sure?
Okay. Did legislators get per diem back in those days?
I'm sorry? Did you mean personally or just all of us in general? Oh, okay, all right. Okay. All right, that's good. Take a look at that. I thought this was an interesting one. On page 44, this citizen thought that it was terrible that we have a legislative spring break. I'm just curious, would we save any money if we did away with the spring break? Might cost us money because our staff would be here? Oh, per diems? That's true. Okay. So what if we took a two-week spring break? Would that be better? All right. Had a number of that emails that talked about instead of the concept of furloughing furloughs, looking at other states. I'm trying to remember the state in particular. I think it was Utah that are going to a 4-day work week. In Arizona, also. Can we put you know, some numbers together as far as right? You can't do the build. Right. Just for state buildings. What has happened? Page 48. What's happened over the last couple of years on our postage costs? Anybody know that? Well, I know the post office keeps raising it. Yeah. Well, this state worker can't believe how many pieces of mail come into the mailbox, you know, with a... What does a stamp cost these days?
44 cents.
44 cents? Instead of... Exactly. Right. Well, that's something that we should, you know, try to get our hands and head around. And also the point was made that, you know, in the event, you know, with email now, you know, should we be able to, across the board in state departments, you know, look at our postage costs, you know, what we're spending on postage. Okay. This individual recommends, how about a bake sale? I kind of like that, bake sale. Page 61, from one state employee to another, eliminate or revise the merit system. Any of my colleagues want to comment on that? Did we? On 62, what would be the savings of combining the Historical Society with the Missouri State Archives?
Good looking at.
Okay. All right. What was the process of the buyout offer for state employees that are close to the retirement age? It was not. Okay. Have we offered that? Didn't it come in debate that we offered that in the past and it wasn't very well received, or? Okay. It didn't save any money. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kelvin, what do you, Do you recall what happened the last time that that we offered, you know, like packet? What was they called that something? I can't remember what they call it. Yeah, why don't you? That'd be great. Like a
Kelvin Simmons, Commissioner, Office of Administration. When you talk about the backdrop, as it was discussed earlier, those backdrop philosophies often had less to do with savings, even though that could be a part of the discussion. It had a lot to do with the institutional knowledge of retaining employees that at the time was felt that we would be able to retain their institutional knowledge, keep them around a little bit longer, and in doing so, the backdrop would allow for a payment, lump sum payment that would take place instead of that employee actually going through the retirement, because once they go through the retirement and they're in the retirement system, you're now paying for that retirement. And so I believe it was probably about 2003 was the last time we had a backdrop incentive that was offered with state employees that would give them a period of time in which they would stay around in state government. I believe that that was the last time, and I think it was mentioned earlier from a savings standpoint, not a lot of savings there, but then again, that philosophy was one to retain employees and retain the institutional knowledge of some of those employees. If savings were a byproduct of that, it would have probably been smaller.
Thank you. Any other questions there? Thank you, Kelvin.
Done.
See you. Page 68, stop the use of state vehicles on weekends. We get that one? Use of state vehicles on weekends.
Except, I would exempt out the highway patrol.
It would seem to me that this person is talking about personal use.
I think we're trying to crack down on personal use of state vehicles. So how many employees have state vehicles that they take home?
We kind of created a pool system, I believe about 6 or 7 years ago, that the more strict of how you get a car. You might ask OA how they administer it.
Kelvin, why don't you stay up here?
Okay.
Because we may have a number of questions for you.
Sounds good, thank you. Yes, sir, Senator.
My question is why are we using state vehicles for personal use at all, any reason? I mean, to stop personal use of vehicles just on weekends seems like we're stopping short. They shouldn't be using a government vehicle for personal use for any reason.
We would discourage the use of the state vehicles on the weekend that were not directly attributed to some level of service that is being performed as it relates to the employee. Where you might have a scenario that was mentioned in the email, it would be my thought that that would be an extreme situation and not the norm. We've consolidated a number of our vehicles in state government consolidated pools so that we reduce the number of vehicles that employees have, and that's been a tremendous savings of us, and I'd love to share that with the committee at some point in time. We continue to reduce vehicles throughout the different agencies and do more consolidations. There should be a rare circumstance where an employee actually has a vehicle that they are taking to the home. I believe that there have probably been a number of reports that have come out sharing when that situation has occurred, and we have discouraged that. So it would be rare unless there was public safety or other issues that I can think of off the top of my head where that person is actually taking a vehicle home. Not to say that it does not occur, but that is something that we would not encourage.
Help me to understand the difference between discourage and forbid. And I'm just, if there's something here that I'm not understanding, I'm very willing to understand it.
That's all right.
Why, in the name of heaven and earth, would there ever be a reason for a state employee to use a state vehicle for personal use? I noticed you used the word discourage very carefully.
Yes, sir.
I'm just wondering, why is it that we discourage rather than forbid?
I can give you examples of where an employee would actually have a state vehicle that would go to the home, but I want to be careful in talking about a person that is a public safety highway patrol person that takes their vehicle to the home because maybe they are in a place in the outstate rural areas and that is easy for them to drive that vehicle home. That would be a case where an employee would drive one to the home. Where an employee simply had a vehicle that maybe they got on a Friday because they were traveling and they took that car home and didn't take it back to the lot. And then they used that vehicle the next day to do something personal, not state. That would be discouraged. And to get to, I think, your meaning, that would be something that we would not want to see because you're not performing, you know, state business. It's best that you take that back to the lot. But there are circumstances where an employee might be traveling, and in that travel, it's 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and they park that vehicle at home. They're going to take that vehicle back the next day. That's what our expectations would be.
Sure, and I'm with you on that.
Gotcha.
Perfectly okay.
Yes, sir.
Some of this may come from my military background, okay? I'm just thinking back to the days when I was in the military. I could just see me taking a vehicle and under an acceptable scenario, get home 11 o'clock Friday night, the motor pool's closed.
Yes, sir.
But I couldn't take it back anyway, right? So I have it at my house. And then Saturday afternoon, I use it to go grocery shopping.
We would discourage that, Senator.
Why don't we forbid that is what I'm trying to get at. Why do we use the word discourage rather than forbid?
I would just think that was the terminology that I use. Forbid is a definition. Yeah, I believe that's, you know.
So what happens? I'm just not understanding why that would be your word of preference. I mean, what happens if an employee does that? He or she takes their car to the grocery store on Saturday afternoon.
Yes.
They take their car to go fishing on Sunday afternoon.
Yes.
What happens?
Well, I believe that in a case like that, and now we're into hypotheticals, and I'm probably answering a hypothetical, and they always say that that's a little on the dangerous side, but let me play that one out as you've asked that question. I would imagine that if the employee were found to do something like that and it were brought to the attention of the employee's supervisor and manager, they have the ability to then deal with the employee in an appropriate manner that allows us to do a variety of things. Those things I probably don't have in front of me, but I would believe that a reprimand or anything that gets to the point of maybe not having that employee utilizing vehicles again, because clearly in a scenario that you've just painted, that would be a situation that clearly is unacceptable for us to see something like that, and we would want the supervisor or the manager to deal with it.
Is there anything in, like, a standard operating procedure right now? You know, it's kind of like the difference when we look at a piece of legislation, the word shall
seems
a whole lot different than the word may.
Yes, sir.
So are we talking about a situation where a supervisor may use disciplinary action on the employee, or a situation where they shall? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth I want to make sure that I understand what you're saying, because it seems as though we're reluctant to get into a situation where we say this is absolutely against the rules. And if we take it outside the hypothetical, we wouldn't have to remain hypothetical if there is indeed something in the standard operating procedures, the rule book, so to speak,
yes,
says point blank, be these vehicles are not to be used for personal use.
Yes, sir. I do believe that we have that kind of language that are in our policy manuals that are in every one of our vehicles. When an employee takes that vehicle out, it's clearly in that handbook. I don't have the exact language there, but it will show up there. And we encourage every one of our employees to take a vehicle out to understand and know that handbook. And so there should not be a scenario where an employee believes or thinks that they can use the vehicle in a personal kind of way. That handbook should spell it out by way of policy.
I'm going to jump in here, Senator. I know you also wanted to follow up on this, but we're looking at we're still on tab one, and we've got 14 tabs, and I don't think that I'm going to be able to hold this all together.
6 minutes.
And we got 5 minutes. So I want to move on. I think that along the lines of this questioning, I'd also be interested in, because there's lots of emails in one of our sections that address cell phone use.
Yes, sir.
By state employees.
Okay.
And I want to have some information about Are we doing this in a way of reimbursing for state business with their personal cell phone, or do we actually have numerous amount of state employees running around with a state paid cell phone that are getting the state paying for their cell phone every month? So it may be both, but I'd like to have that as detailed of information as possible.
Absolutely, we can provide that
yes,
for you, Senator.
Yes, Senator Cross, sir.
Since we're on cell phones, that's in 12, and it's 1212. It's a actual item on email. It's way back there, but I was going to have that covered. I'd be interested to find out if we could be doing something a little different. Instead of paying for an individual cell phone, maybe we give them a stipend if they have an existing cell phone, and if that would potentially save the state some money
sure.
versus providing an actual cell phone for them.
We will do our best to get you that information. Some of it is based on the plans that they present to us and how we either break that out individually or take advantage of economies of scale, and ultimately it's rolled in. But I think we can get that information for you, Senator.
I think there's some cost savings that could be potentially be done there. So,
yes, sir.
Numerous emails on the idea that that the General Assembly should look at itself. Number of them addressing the size of the General Assembly. The idea that at 163, our House of Representatives, one of the largest in the country, our Senate at 34 is one of the smallest. Now, at the risk of trying to cover myself and my colleagues backside, I introduced a bill that downsized the House yesterday. And I would be interested to know if we could run some numbers on that to what kind of savings that would be. I've kind of roughed it at around $6 million a year. And I think that's conservative. My thought with going to 103 in the House, that's about a 3-to-1 ratio over the members of the Senate to the members of the House. Some states actually even have a 2-to-1 ratio of their Senate to the House. Okay, so I throw that out there, for those that are here, because that was something that was in a lot of emails that came to us. They also think there were a couple of people that think that we should start flying commercial. Of course, we don't fly anywhere on the taxpayer's dime, but there is that thought that we're going off on trips and different things. But certainly there's that perception out there that your legislators are flying all over the place on the taxpayer's nickel.
Do you travel?
They have a travel account on that. I don't know the answer to that, but I would.
Senate, we got.
All right.
They started cutting down on that. I don't know how it is right now, but I know they were tightening down on that.
Senator Krause?
Yeah, page 76 says no advertising by state employees. I'd be interested in seeing which agencies they actually do advertise and if there's return on that investment or why we're doing it to see if there are some abilities to save some money there.
I think that is very good. I also highlighted that one and the idea that, you know, that this services, you know, brought to you by the Department of Mental Health, or you know, right? Any, you know, I think that I've heard some from you know different statewide. I mean, I'd like to know, you know, what we're spending, sponsorship and advertising. Yes, yes, that would be of interest.
What page is
it? All right, moving on to tab two. Let's Senator Krause, you have one?
Yeah, page 16, there's a comment basically most government employees like to spend every bit of their budget. Maybe we could look into potentially offering some incentives to agencies that don't spend their entire budget in one year and give them some of that money in the following year. Because the theory out there, and I'm in the Army, and I'll tell you, in the Army, the theory is if we don't spend it this year, we won't get it next year. And so I think there's some potential ability there for us to do something that maybe gives some incentives to agencies that don't spend all of the money and allow them to get that money next year, even though they didn't spend it this year.
That was a repeated theme, that came through a lot of different emails, and it had to come from, I think, you know, employees that aren't necessarily disgruntled, but they're good, you know, honest people that think, hey, you know, we didn't need all these new copy machines. You know, the other copy machine was working just fine. Getting back to the recommendation by Senator Green and the idea of a biannual budget, would that address that idea of use it or lose it? Would it help us in that process?
Interesting thing there, Senator, because I think that over a period of time, historically, you've had just that, where you've had state agencies that knew they were getting down to the last pennies within their budget, or they knew they had a sizable amount of dollars in their budget. And as you get to the end of the fiscal year, you take a look at the sizable money left, and then you spend it down, because the thought was if it were to lapse over, you probably didn't need it. Now, at times, that those are philosophies that historically have probably been vested in agencies, and how I would imagine, you know, people looked at their budget. We have to do things differently today than we've done in the past. I'm one of those guys that believes that I take the deal that if I could show you savings and I could give you those savings and you'd be willing to give it back to me and say, hey, I wouldn't reduce you next year, I'd take that one all day, but I'm going to be different than the other agencies that may not be able to do some of the same things. But I think that the philosophy has to change significantly, because that is something that you would have encountered, particularly when the state was dealing in good economic times and you had large sums of dollars coming into your agencies and you didn't quite know what you wanted to do, so you just did something so that it showed up next year as we spent it down, because you might have the thought you really didn't need it, so therefore I'm going to reduce it out of your budget. But those are philosophies that I imagine, you know, were dictated by good economic times, but in bad economic times we have to do things differently.
This, you might be the wrong guy to ask, but in changing this paradigm,
yes, sir.
Would you envision that it would affect the supplementals that came before you know, the General Assembly every year? Or in your area, and I just can't do it by memory, or do you have much that comes into a supplemental budget?
Yes, sir. Sometimes what you'll find is through our facilities management, we may bring things through supplemental. For instance, as you're talking about facilities, energy, there are times when the state has to guess how much money we're going to spend on our electric bill throughout the entire state. What we don't know is at that particular time, you may have a utility company that's going to raise rates that then affect us. We then have to come back and tell you that the money originally scheduled, or the money that was originally appropriated, was not enough. So therefore, we might come back and ask for supplemental. That be an example for us in the Office of Administration where that would be the case. But I would imagine there are other agencies that would answer that question, you know, quite different. But I can give you a few scenarios in OA where that would be the case, where we might come back to you for supplemental.
Kevin, as we in some of these different areas, the one that you just addressed,
yes, sir,
were energy costs.
Yes, sir.
And again, I know that is a very volatile, you know, up and down. Do we have the ability and the technology as the different departments are going through and spending the appropriation the General Assembly has made? Are you able to look at that on a monthly basis as we go through the fiscal year to determine where they are?
Yes, sir. I'll just take my own office for an example, is that I know what the appropriation the General Assembly has given to the office, and I start off with that on my July 1 of the fiscal year. Each month, I'm going to reduce that amount on a monthly basis in my various categories that would be in my office, so that at the end of that month, it's going to give me where I am in terms of my spend in that month and what is left. I do that every month and look at that every month, and I should know exactly where I am to make the adjustments of where I need to be so that you don't overspend.
Right.
It also tells me that, you know, I'm doing very well, and if you're a good manager and you're spending under that amount, then it tells you, you know, exactly where you are. So I would say, given that circumstance, our managers and our different divisions, and I'm giving you the OA example, should know exactly where we are budgetarily on a monthly basis.
Makes me think of that when, you know, when I go to a gas pump and I go in and give the guy $20, and when it gets down towards the end, you know, it slows down as far as how much it's putting into my tank.
Yes, sir.
We have the ability to do that with the departments so that they don't show up in front of the Appropriations Committee asking for a supplemental. I'd be very interested in finding out, you know, what the dynamics of that are and if we can do a better job tracking based on the appropriations that the General Assembly, you know, has allotted. Is that affecting their spending habits? Okay, you know, so if we have the technology,
mm-hmm.
I'd be interested to know how we can utilize it to slow down the spending. You know, if they're getting to the point where they're in danger of having to come back in front of me and asking for more money.
I think that we have the ability to be able to share that with you. You know, I would offer the philosophy that when we're dealing with supplemental, it should be a scenario where at times that is an unexpected occurrence that you did not forecast, were not able to forecast, could not see, and then based on that, we come back to you. Now, I know that that's not always the example.
That's not the way it's being used now, though. Yes, that's my problem. And I'm not saying across the board. I generally, when we're going through that process, we'll let the different agency or department know that I didn't think it was proper to be in a supplemental.
Yes, sir.
Right?
That's correct.
I agree with you. When they're unforeseen or, you know, you just couldn't have forecast, you know, what your expense is going to be here.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep moving. I think what I'm going to do, if the members of the committee will bear with me, if the members of the committee, if it's okay, I think that what we'll do is we'll go another 15 minutes, and then we are going to come back for another session on Thursday. Okay? Come back for another session on Thursday. I hope that all the members will be available, and there's a lot of good information here, and I don't want to miss the opportunity of getting, you know, all the way through getting through as much of this as possible. So, Senator Green?
One whole tab, I think it's five, that deals with the reduction of the legislature, and you've already dealt with that. So we can, there's about 20 of them that are the same issue, and I think tab five jumped through that.
Okay, good. Thank you, Senator. Senator Cross?
Page 17, tab 2, page 17, has to do with reducing salaries on a sliding scale.
I thought that was interesting. So it actually takes, you know, it puts them into categories of over $80,000, a 10% cut, and then goes all the way down to
basically $5,000 increments, decreasing it by 1% each 5,000.
All the way down to 40,000, and brought it all the way down to a 1%. Right.
I'd be interesting to see if that would save the state any money and how much. I know reducing salaries is not ever a popular opinion, but when you're looking at $500 million to $700 million, depending on who's speaking that day. That might be something
right.
We might
and
want to consider.
The idea of the alternative being there not being a job there.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you. Actually, Senator Green, I'd be interested in your feedback on Tab 3, the first page, the idea of consolidation of counties. I know that you know a lot about counties, but my question is, you know, the state of California has 15 counties, all right? We have 114 counties plus the city of St. Louis,
right?
I mean,
I cannot agree with you more, but trying to establish consolidating counties is an efficient thing to do, but is it a realistic thing to try? Because you have three county commissioners in each county, unless they're charter farms of government. I think that's only Jackson, Jefferson, St. Charles, and St. Louis.
Consolidating counties is that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, because we...
That will save the state. We reimburse... Percent. One of the things we reimburse counties in the general administration budget is the assessment program, assessment maintenance. Now, we have cut that back. We basically pay county governments money per parcel to operate their county governments to assess property and collect taxes. So your state taxpayer is paying money to county governments to do their job of assessing and collecting taxes. But school districts and county governments, and just like I said, prosecuting attorneys, making them district attorneys, great ideas until you get the constituency contacting their elected officials. And I want you to consolidate government, just don't consolidate my government. So, but yeah, it's school districts and counties would be a great thing to reorganize government. Good luck.
Yeah. How many counties in California?
15.
15?
What? Oh, that's not what somebody told me.
Oh, there's a 5 in there.
Yeah, it was a 5. Okay. 57? All right, we'll use it. Next time I use that, I'll use a different state with less counties.
I'm not going to save this budget year.
No, just like the one we try to.
Coordination of state reps.
Got to think now when times are tough.
I thought this was interesting. A gentleman from, it was a lady from Liberty, Missouri. Page 4 under tab 3. Do away with reassessment every 2 years. Property values are not increasing that fast. I think that would be a huge savings again to our counties, wouldn't it? I'm sorry? Decreasing, yeah, right.
Oh.
Theoretically.
Senator Green, page 5, do you know much about community partnerships? No, section 3. Says, I'm sorry? Oh, it is. Okay. All right. It says that St. Louis and Kansas City are able to do whatever they're doing without state support. Are you familiar with that, how they get their support? I'm asking the... Okay. We'll look into that. Okay. All right, just to establish where I got my information. Page 10 under tab 3. California is considerably larger than Missouri. California has 17 counties, and Missouri has 115 counties. All right? That's where I got my information. I guess I got to be careful. Okay. Got a lot of emails from people across the state of Missouri on consolidating all levels of government. So I think that's interesting. Why does the state pay $25,000 for legal expenses to the circuit clerk of the city of St. Louis? I think I've tried to cut that a couple of years, haven't I, Senator? Oh, we did. We've zeroed that out. All right. How's it working for us? We're about done with 3. There were a couple of emails in here in relation to the cost of elections across the state. And I think that there may have been some proposals put forward as far as again, consolidating, you know, the number of polling places, you know, in different areas. Now, I don't know if that's something that is more of a local function, you know, through the local election boards, but I know that it certainly affects, you know, where we mandate, you know, how many ballots you have to have at any given location, how many machines you have to have. You know, we certainly don't want to make it more difficult for our citizens to exercise their responsibility to vote. I think it might be something that we, you know, that maybe we open it up to the counties and say, what are we mandating to you that makes it more expensive, you know, for you to do your job, and then in turn, you know, makes it more expensive for us to have elections.
Something to think about, elections. We have too many months in the statutes that allow having elections. I think down south you've seen the opportunities, the dates to have elections. Sometimes a school district will try to pass a bond issue in February. They fail. They come back in April. They fail. They come back in June. Looking at statutes of downsizing the opportunities for elections so you don't wear people out and use apathy to get something passed.
Is that a statutory change or a constitutional change?
I believe that's just statutory. I could be wrong.
That's statutory?
Constitution.
In the Constitution.
That was a good guess on my part.
Okay, let's move into tab 4. This is interesting. Again, it may be outside of our purview, but I'm going to ask the question of anybody that might be able to answer. And that's receiving any kind of health care benefit or food stamps or WIC or any of the different services through social services. It says here that no one ever asked for identification or proof of citizenship. Anybody comment on that? Yes.
Now, if
right. That's something different. So Is it policy that the department has? So it's a presumption of eligibility? Is it a for the child?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Senator. I know. I was taking a little chairman leeway there. Sorry. You object? No.
I recognize that.
Yeah. The objection noted. All right, I'm in tab 5. I had is that the one with the a lot of them for the downsizing the General Assembly? I agree. I'm going to direct you to page 7 though. There's a few interesting things beyond the state General Assembly here. You've got eliminate the Missouri Technology Corporation, which I believe they were appropriated what about $1.7 million last year's budget. Is that right? Okay. Interesting. The idea of eliminating 3 circuit and 3 associate judges in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and Jackson County. On the, I'd be interested. Well, that's really not our area either, is it?
Well,
go ahead.
Kind of is and kind of isn't, but I think what we need to do is enforce the statute on the population ratios of where you have associates and circuits. When population increases, for example, in the county of St. Charles, we have increased associates and circuits because there's a bigger population. The issue being when the population is decreased, like in the city of St. Louis, you have not decreased, so you have increased the judiciary. So the question being enforcing statute and inquiring the judicial branch of how they do that.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, Senator, because what I've been encouraging as far as allowing these new judgeships that are created through the statutory trigger, that what have we done to address and they have done some studies. They've done, you know, they've looked at themselves internally and said, you know, we could downsize the city of St. Louis by three judgeships or two judgeships, whatever it was. I don't have the, you know, have the study in front of me, but they haven't made any changes there. So I agree with you. I think that what we should look at is all the resources they have should.
Right, but you need to also look in fairness to the caseload too.
Oh yeah, they were basing it not. They weren't basing it just on population. Yeah, they were based on what they have in place, resources. Yeah.
State courts administrator.
Okay. Well, on this email it says to eliminate the office of state court administrator. I wasn't advocating that, by the way. I was just reading what it said at the end of the email. Anybody else have anything else in five? I don't see any highlights. No? All right. Well, we're going to stop there. And I will get out to the members of the work group the timing on us getting back together on Thursday. So thank you very much for your time and your input, and thank you to those that attended today.